So, okay, then I did read these, so I am good, or semi-good.
Okay, is this on? Thingy's on? Okay. Call the meeting to order. It is 6:35, July 7th. Can we do roll call, please?
Yes. Brendan Sullivan Sarniana.
Present.
Christopher Griffiths.
Present.
Milt Friedman.
Here.
Sarah Murray.
Here.
Jeff Campa.
Here.
And I just wanted to note for the record that the city attorney staff is not present. He's at the current city council meeting and will be coming as soon as he's available.
He's at the current city council meeting? Mm-hmm. When it starts at 7 o'clock?
Right, there's a closed session beforehand.
Oh, he's doing the closed. Okay, I was going to say if he's at a city council meeting, he's not joining us tonight.
Do we have any agenda changes?
I just wanted to note that the item 7A, case 876 for 1835 Santa Clara, came to an agreement about the amount of the rent, so they won't be heard tonight. The amount is, they agreed to a $200 rent increase, which is 9.5%.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have staff announcements?
I would like to make just a few announcements. First, I just wanted to welcome Sarah Murray. She was appointed intern to fill the housing provider seat. And I also just wanted to note that Chris Griffiths was also appointed, so he'll be serving beginning a four-year term starting July. And I just wanted to note for the public that if you'd like to make a public comment on any agenda item on this agenda or not on the agenda, please check in with staff in the back for the procedures. And just wanted to clarify, welcome everyone here tonight. The intention of the meeting is for both parties to have opportunity to speak and be heard. Just with that said, we have just a few guidelines. One is no interruptions and be respectful. And I just wanted to remind everyone that the committee is made up of 5 volunteers that all live in the city of Alameda. The cases tonight are limited to 40 minutes, and I'll be keeping the time for that. And the agenda for tonight is on the back table in the room, and it can also be found on our website, alamedarentprogram.org. The agenda talks about what items will be discussed, as well as any supportive documents that are submitted. That's all of the announcements that I have.
Okay. Do we have a public comment on any non-agenda items?
Yes, I think we'd like to invite Andrew Watson from Echo Housing.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Angie Watson-Hajim, and I'm from an organization called Echo Housing. We're a nonprofit housing counseling agency. And we have 2 programs that we run here in the city of Alameda. We have a fair housing program, which I am the coordinator for. And under that program, we investigate discrimination complaints in housing. So people call up our office and they feel like they're being denied housing or treat them fairly in housing based on their protected class. We do a lot of things around children, disability rights, and things like that. We also have a landlord-tenant department, which deals with things around repair issues, maintenance, questions about notices and rent increases, and we help both tenants and landlords know what their rights and responsibilities are. The RAC here deals with rent increases. They don't deal with things like, my landlord won't fix my broken window or my tenant won't pay their rent. So we deal with those kind of issues that come up in housing. And we also, when we have funding, we do provide rental assistance helping people with their late deposit or needing deposits for new rentals or being late on their rent. We can sometimes help people with that. So it's Echo Housing, and I have my business cards and some flyers at the table in fact if you need more information. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent calendar. the approval of the minutes from the May 1st meeting. Does anyone have anything that they saw that needed to be amended? No? Okay. I make a motion to approve the minutes from May 1st.
A second. I'm Chris Griffiths.
Okay. I'm Brendan.
And I can stay in the So, all in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
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 Yeah, I'm abstaining because I wasn't present. So
okay.
I can't testify as an accuracy.
Okay. Did you need names on that or no? Got it.
Got it.
Okay. And right. Do you have any unfinished business?
No unfinished business.
No unfinished business. Okay. Moving on to new business. 7A was resolved with a 9.5% increase, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And 7B, 2017-53-4513, case 884, 1336 Park Street, apartment 217. If Patrick Donaldson and Vicky Coyler would like to come up. Yeah. And if you want water, we've got some water here. Would you like water?
Oh, no, thank you.
Would you like water?
Sure.
Representative.
So usually we have the landlords in
the office,
but if you're okay here.
Oh, I'm fine here.
Okay.
It's easier for you guys.
This is fine. We're being more comfortable with. So I know that Jennifer has been over the process with you a little bit,
yes.
And I'm going to let her summarize the case in just a moment. But I would always like to take a moment just to kind of, you know, let it, you know what it's about here. So we're all volunteers. We all live here in Alameda. And we appreciate you coming here, both of you. We know that it can be a little intimidating, but we're just here to help you find a solution. That's what we do.
Okay.
And, you know, this isn't a place for adjudication. It's not, we're not a court of law. We're just here to help you find an agreement. And we kind of have a dual role. First as mediators, which is where we try to help people kind of talk through what their issues are and hear each other out and hopefully find a solution. And if you folks can't get to a solution, then we kind of switch gears and we vote.
Okay.
And I think that Jennifer already explained that, and we're just doing the best we can, and we hope you join us in that spirit. Did you want to add something?
No.
No. Okay. And Jennifer's going to give a case summary real quick, and we see this beforehand, so we got this ahead of time, so we've already read over this. This isn't our first time seeing it, but Jennifer repeats it so it's on the record.
Thanks, and I just wanted to invite, if you were more comfortable, you can take me around. So, just to clarify again, this is for the unit at 1336 Park Street, apartment 217. This unit is a non-exempt unit, and it's subject to a non-binding decision regarding the amount of the rent increase. The current rent is $1,550 for a studio unit. The rent includes water, gas, and electricity. The tenant also pays an additional $50 monthly fee for parking. The rent increase offer is $77.50, which is exactly 5% for a total rent of $1,627.50, effective July 1st. And there hasn't been a previous rent increase because the tenancy began last year in 2016. The tenant requested this rent increase and stated that they find what would be reasonable for a rent increase would be a $10 increase, which is about 6.6%. Just as a summary, in the documents you already received, the tenant had noted that he believes the rent is already high and that there had not seen improvements at the property since the tenancy began that he would see as warranting an increase to the amount of rent. and the landlord stated that the rent increase offered is intended to raise the rent to meet the market rate. In brief summary.
Okay. So we always give a few minutes each for either of you to summarize if you think Jennifer missed something or something new to add, or you don't have to take time if you don't want to. As I said, we've already read through this. And we start with the landlord. So if you'd like, you have 5 minutes, isn't it? Which if you feel that there's something that's missing from this summary, you're welcome to talk about that if you want to.
Okay. There is, we did issue a, well, the previous manager did issue a 5%, or the owner as a whole. Owner representative issued a 5% increase based on the Alameda ordinance to that the Alameda form that allowed the rent increase to happen, which is a 5% rent increase to meet market value. Really didn't meet market value because market value is a little bit higher than 5%, but we kept it within the 5%. Also, the rent increase, I've been at the property now for since the 20th of June. And in further research after sending over information to you guys, I also did additional research because the rent includes electricity, which is funded by, I guess, Alameda Power, also by PG&E. So PG&E is the driver of the utilities through, and Alameda Power basically provides the electricity. That increase for us has increased dramatically along the boards with everyone else within the Bay Area, within whoever uses PG&E. That transfer of power for PG&E to provide the power has increased, based on what I've seen, 60%. And once again, I did hear what the summary was, but we also include the garbage as well as the recycling. And we also have intent. We've been doing his particular unit has been renovated. It was renovated prior to move in. And we also are slated to do additional renovations. New roof, which is external. However, we're doing common area renovations, which would include the hallways and painting and things of that nature. Those are things that's kind of sight unseen to tenants, but to residents, but those are in the workings, and we're in the process of getting quotes. Well, actually, I'm in the process of getting quotes to have those things done, which could easily be, could have been done prior to and used as a 10% pass-through, but we decided not to pass that 10% on. To take our time and do it and not rush like most people would do it, pass it through. So, and that's it.
Just to summarize, we always summarize afterwards.
Absolutely.
One of us does to make sure we hear you correctly.
Okay.
So if what I say back to you is not what you were trying to communicate,
let me know.
So the rent increase is primarily to help pay for the increase in cost that the property is seeing, the management is seeing. And for anticipated improvements that will be done that benefit the tenant.
And market. So market. So
right.
What the market is calling for the fact that we include all the utilities and our utility costs have increased. The renovations that's gonna happen. But that's not really a part of the 5%.
Mm-hmm.
5% really is the market and our utility costs have gone up tremendously. So the pre-foreseen renovations don't count because they haven't happened yet.
Sure.
I can only go off of what was happening now,
okay.
Which is the market and then the utilities, which are increasing.
So I know on the forms that we got, just to be clear again, it said AMP, water and garbage, and then what you're saying, also PG&E, which is gas.
Which is, well, right. So the heating of the unit, so the water,
mm-hmm.
The hot water heater, the hot water tank is gas. PG&E, a part of AMP, it's funneled through PG&E. You guys understand what I'm saying, right? Where PG&E is the driver of the electricity. AMP isn't the driver.
Sure.
AMP is just the person. They provide the electricity and bill for it.
Sure.
But PG&E basically the facilitator.
Right.
And those prices have increased tremendously.
Okay.
So that includes the electricity, the gas, water, garbage, and the recycling.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Okay. And Ms. Donaldson, if you want to take a few minutes, if you think there's something that was missing or you'd like to add, you can, or you don't have to.
Sure. Well, I didn't know that about the electricity. So part of the reason that I requested this review was just to understand why I was getting a rent increase. You know, I just moved in last year. I like the unit. But, yeah, it seemed a little steep, 5% to me, especially when I had no, you know, visible improvements that I could see. And I should also note that, you know, it's a studio. I would say it's a small studio. I measured square footage. Last night it was about 290 square feet. So when I said, like, it was high for what I was getting, I mean, I felt like, you know, it's a pretty small place. And high is, you know, I guess the market is already so high to me. I mean, just like, you know, in general. So, you know, since I wrote my comments, I did do a little research and found different stuff. I mean, one source I found said that average rent has gone down in the last year. A couple other sources says it has gone up about 5 to 8%. So, you know, I see the argument there. But if it's all just about market rates, I mean, am I going to get a rent decrease when it goes down? I guess that would be one question. I kind of feel like, you know, I'm there, so it's such a hassle to move that, you know, they can just, you know, levy an increase on you, and it's pretty, you know, it's a pain to really do anything about it. Yeah, I think that's kind of all that comes to mind at the moment, but basically just wanted some more explanation of the increase.
Let me just summarize.
You got it! Yes, so Vicky!
And then,
yeah.
If anyone has questions, and then we can kind of get back into it. Okay. So would somebody else like to take a shot at summarizing these gentlemen?
Yeah. So it sounds like the reason you're here isn't necessarily a financial hardship, but more of you want to know what's going into this rent increase, what's really driving this, and kind of a little bit of uncertainty with, you know, it's going up now because market prices are going up, but if they go down in the future, you want to know if, you know, it'll match that way. So it sounds like you're curious if it's just kind of a one-way up street, or, you know, if it works both ways.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of question that whole argument basically on that, you know, reasoning is that, like, if market rates go up, yeah, I mean, you're never going to get a rent decrease. So I feel like, you know, the market's been going up in the Bay Area, but at some point it's got to come down. And just, I was also a little concerned by the language in the notice was like your annual rent increase. It just seemed like, you know, this could happen every year. And I should say about the financial hardship, I mean, I can afford it, I'm not going to lie, but it's, you know, it comes out to another $850 a year, which is substantial for anyone. So if they have increased costs, that's one thing. I would also want to know, I mean, you said the electricity has gone up tremendously. How much is that, like, for a unit?
Like, I would have to, it's basically the...
I'm sorry.
That's
okay.
Before
we start,
I mean, his summary was basically right, so I'm just adding a few things.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. And if any of us jump in, it's just to, like, keep us on track. It's not to be rude, I promise.
No, you're the one who jumps in. You're the boss.
You're the boss.
We don't jump in. You jump in.
Okay, so before we get into a dialogue, which is great, I think it's really good that you guys are already talking, I want to see if there's any questions before we start hashing through it, if anyone has any questions. As of yet, keeping in mind that they haven't spoken to each other yet, so we don't want to like anticipate anything if it's necessary.
So actually, I would hold off any questions I have and suggest maybe Vicki respond to Patrick's question about rents going down if the market, whatever the market happens to do. I think it was a legitimate question that you had. And so, Vicki, what's your view? Is I know you're saying you're a new manager here, but...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I just got to say, like, the market is pretty hard to define. I mean, it's, you know, I was looking at data, I guess. But, I mean, it's a pretty ephemeral kind of thing that... just one more reason why I would kind of question the whole argument. So, go ahead.
So, in Patrick's particular building, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head, I want to say it's 25 units. I could be wrong. However, the number of units really don't matter. There's three buildings that span that Park Avenue, Park Street side. So there's like 1336, 1330, and there's another one at the end, 1360, I think. Everyone, fair housing law requires you to be fair with housing. Everyone received a rent increase that fell within the parameters of doing a rent increase. So it's not specific to one particular person. So if you're going to be fair across the board, you have to be fair with everyone. And he mentioned, you know, what happens if rents decrease when we get a decrease in rents. You know, if rents decrease, and from what I've seen over the 20 years that I've been doing property management, is that owners take into consideration if there's a rent decrease. Because what happens is that people start to move. If they're in a $1,550 a month apartment, and they see that I can get a two-bedroom for the same amount, they move, in which notice takes place with owner to say, I need to drop rents. Mm-hmm. So although your rent is increased by 5%, your rent, then your utility costs still, in this case, specific to his building, in which the other two or three buildings, all utilities are included except for one. Those same individuals in that one unit where utilities weren't included also got a 5% increase. Or weren't not included and received a 5% increase above what they're paying in utility costs. So electricity goes up, water goes up. And I know most individuals want to see the benefit. What's my benefit? Sometimes the benefit is sight unseen. Sometimes the benefit comes at the back end or in the middle. And unfortunately, at this particular time, based on timing, you can't see the benefit, but the benefit comes at some point. And personally, I feel that the decrease of rent, like I said, is proven when people start moving. Then no one gets an increase. That's just how it works. That's how it's been working for years. Rent goes down. People start moving. He's like, oh, my God, I'm going to leave the rents where they are. I'm not going to do an increase. So that's how you see the benefit of a rent increase. I think coming from different cities where you have the, quote, unquote, rent control, you really don't see. Or when you're in a situation where you don't have rent control, you see these jumps happen tremendously across the board where people are like, rents are being raised like 200%. And like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, so that's just my response to it. I know that our rents in that building, in your particular building, they range from people who've been there 10 years to people who've been there, who moved in 6 months after you moved in, and their rents are already $150 to $200 more than what you're paying. And they moved in 2, 3, 4 months after you moved in, just off the rent roll.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sorry. But
so people that have been there longer than me are paying less, is what you're saying?
Absolutely, that's how it works.
So, yeah, that's how it works.
It's like tenure.
Yeah, that's called retirement plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works that way. And unfortunately, it does work that way because you have that you have the people, you have those individuals who've been there 15 years who pay less, but then you have those individuals who, it kind of depends on what part of the wave you come in on.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's just the way it is.
Doesn't that kind of go against the argument, though, that, when rents go up, people move? There's a big incentive to stay at your current place. And it's, like I said before, it's a huge hassle to move. So, you're saying that the rent increase is distributed evenly across the board. Is that just in terms of like percentage of each person's?
Everyone, it's always a 5% increase regardless of where you started. So if you're at X, you're going to get a 5. Everyone gets the same, because the Fair Housing Law says you have to be fair across the board.
But I'm paying more for the whatever additional costs are than the person that's been there longer.
You think so?
Well, more in a dollar amount. 5% for me is more than 5% for someone that's paying less.
Right.
May I ask a question about the units?
Sure.
Are they all the same types of units, or are there different?
They're all studios. There's two different sizes.
Okay. And is Mr. Dawson in a smaller size or a larger size?
He's in a smaller size.
A smaller size. Okay. And how many? Do you know what the breakdown is? Like how many?
There's. I want to say. Of the larger studios, I would say, let's just call it, there's three buildings. One building has 25, 12, maybe 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you say market rate, what does the property management, how do they base market rate? What do they use by that? Like how do they get that definition?
We do market analysis. We look at the market. We go on different websites and see where the market's working, how the market is trending in Alameda. We kind of fall below units. I normally go out specifically and do a price comparison. I did it today on units that are being listed on various websites, Craigslist being one, and look at those units and see, you know, what they're going for and how they compare and contrast to what we're offering. If I feel that, just for me, if I feel that we're too high, then I will make a suggestion to drop it or go down a little on the rent or of what they're offering. I think with these particular units, the offerings are correct considering the fact that all your utility costs are included. That kind of offsets. And so when I kind of look at that, do an average of what a person is paying utilities for a particular unit, I mean, it's just a lot of things that just kind of go into it. And you just kind of look at it and say, okay, you know, what can we do? How can we do this? How does it work? How do we continue to make improvements, offer a service, continue to have the unit or the environment the same as what it was when the person actually decided to live there.
Right. So that
and improvement. And improve it and try to improve it as well. It's like you make that initial decision to move somewhere. It's like, okay, how do I continue to maintain that standard of what you chose at the time that you chose and also do improvements along the way.
And the tenant, Patrick's a new, can I call you back? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Patrick's a new tenant. And so you said the unit was renovated before he moved
prior to, yeah.
Okay, so that, but does that mean that there was a new paint job?
Oh, yeah.
And do you know if there was the kitchen new, or is there new carpet or new flooring? You know, Patrick?
You have hardwood flooring, correct?
No,
I can tell you exactly.
I mean, it's in good condition. I would say there's a new paint job. Carpet, I wouldn't say is new. And actually, they required that I buy a rug. I should note that. So I was having some noise issues with the downstairs person. And currently it's in my lease to have a rug covering the floor. So I did that. But, you know, it's nice. It's what I agreed to pay $1,550 a month for.
Sure.
I wouldn't say it's like, you know, it's a pretty old building. I don't know what the year is, but
the reason I ask that is because I want to make sure that you know, when we talk about market rate, you're right, it's such a nebulous concept. So to a lot of us, I think even folks that, you know, are in the business, it's kind of a nebulous concept. So I want to make sure that when we talk about market rate, we're talking about a unit that
comparable unit, like, is what you're saying.
Yeah, something that, you know, has never been painted in 30 years and has an outhouse.
It has the same rug for 19 years with little wear marks in the middle of it.
Sure, that's why. That's the only reason I ask. I'm not trying to make a judgment. I'm just trying to, you know.
Well, we do a move-in, move-out checklist prior to, and which, can I call you Patrick?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Then Patrick signed off on, which states the condition of the unit prior to moving in. And we're in the middle of doing 1, 2, 3 turns right now on units, renovations, don't call them turns, renovations on units. And hardwood flooring, it's always redone. Painted, we're putting in new kitchens, new countertops. So it's a unit that we want to be, one, when someone moves out and we advertise unit to be rented, we want it to rent. We don't want it to sit on the market. And we know that in order to rent said unit, you have to bring it to market where it looks like it matched the comps, you know, and it all looks the same and everybody's happy with what they're receiving, and, you know, and just that's just the standard in which we try to do things. Yeah.
So just anecdotally, you've rented units since Patrick has moved in, and those rents are higher?
The previous property manager, her name was Jennifer. She rented units prior to Patrick moving in, and those rents were, yes, indeed higher. I just started with the company as of June 20th. So I did go in and look at the rent roll and to see what was there. And, yes, they did rent unit. They rent actually 1, 2 units, a little bit higher than what Patrick rented as.
We don't have rent control in Alameda.
No.
What we do have is we have this rent stabilization ordinance. Mm-hmm. And under that ordinance, Patrick, you must have requested this hearing, right? Because it wasn't triggered by the landlords raising a rent greater than 5%.
Right, yeah.
So you requested the hearing because mm-hmm. you wanted to an opportunity to better understand and to have a voice in this process.
Yeah.
And so we're here, and what we would like to result from it is that both of you have a chance to talk mm-hmm. about your needs, and maybe you haven't had a chance to talk before, and so that the relationship that you have is a sustainable
one. Absolutely.
And so I think, you know, just come back to one of the comments that Jeff made earlier, that, you know, Patrick had some questions that he was voicing. And what we're encouraging is just that you have an opportunity to talk to each other, ask each other questions about this, say, you know, I don't think this is fair, what's your point of view, or whatever, and see if you can, you know, if it were the case that you had a financial need, Patrick, that if you were really struggling and a landlord was asking for a rent that was even 5%, and we thought that, you know, the landlord could ask for a lower rent. And we might recommend a lower rent, even though this is not a binding decision.
Absolutely.
But that is an opportunity that we as a community would have, is to say that, is to say, you know, we really think in this case that the landlord should make some accommodation. But if the two of you can just reach the point where you feel you're comfortable going forward, mm-hmm. That's an option as well.
That's the ideal.
Yes.
That's what we strive for. So do you have any other, just to try and clarify, is there any other information you feel you need to have in order to be able to evaluate the $77.50 they're asking?
Well, I guess just, you might not have this, but just, you said your costs went up, just like quantify that, like how much for my unit, you know, if you know that, like,
how much
has it gone up?
I haven't looked at specifically your unit. However, I did read over your response, and I found your response to be quite interesting in a very respectful way. But what I did was I saw that your response today, if I'm hearing correctly, you're saying, well, I need justification, or I need you to justify why you're raising the rent 5%. However, in your response, you said, well, I feel I should only have to pay $10 more.
Well, it's, you know, a bar. You know, this is it's a negotiation. I'm not going to say,
either,
you know.
It's either I pay nothing or I pay
I'd rather pay less, you know, obviously.
I think that goes without saying.
Without
and you'd like, and you would have liked to have raised it more,
yeah.
I'm sure.
No, not really.
And actually, you know, if there is no rent control in Alameda, I would be curious, like, why, if you stay there longer, like, why haven't you just evened out the rents, you know, for everyone?
I feel like these are, because I'm
like philosophical
tenant.
Kind of questions.
I'm a tenant myself, and I feel like these are philosophical questions that are beyond our ability to answer. They're like market questions in a housing market that sometimes doesn't make sense even to housing providers. It's kind of beyond our... I mean, you're right. A lot of these things intellectually, you would think, I'm not going to argue with some of these arguments on either side, but, I mean, they're kind of beyond
our scope.
But
they're beyond our
scope,
yes.
Yeah. My question is, I heard Vicki speaking to the fact that rent increases have been requested of all the tenants. And what I want to know is what would happen if Patrick was given a smaller rent increase than other tenants in the building.
What would happen if Patrick was given a small increase?
So what would happen, for example, if in this process, either through your mutual decision-making or through a decision of this body, rent increase was recommended that was less than the 5% that was being given to everybody else in
I wouldn't agree to that because it wouldn't be fair across the board for everyone else who agreed or who said, okay, I'm subjected to a 5% increase and I'm just going to go ahead. You know, I had one tenant who came to me and said, you know, she was like, hey, you know, a 5% increase is a little steep. I said, I understand. And she says, can you help me figure out a way? And I said, okay, so I looked at her file and I said, what's most important to you? Convenient parking or parking behind the building and a block away on free parking space? She said, you're absolutely correct. So now she parks until she does something different.
That's like an optional.
No. I'm not saying
so,
to you specifically, I'm just giving an example. I think that rent increases were, I mean, if everyone wanted to dispute their rent increase, I would be here for everyone who disputed and who said, and I would offer explanation and do the same thing with all the tenants who did that. I mean, I recommend it. If you have questions, of course, you know, you gotta ask. I think this is wonderful. However, it would be fair.
So if I understand that correctly, just to make sure I understand that the issue is fairness is the most important thing to you. If all the tenants came to say, like, hey, I want a different type of increase, you would still stand by the 5% and explain why.
I would explain why, yes, I would.
I just want to make sure I understood for myself.
Yes, I would. I mean, if rent increases were given to all residents at a 5% rent increase, and 90% of the residents said, I want a hearing. Would not deny their right to a hearing. I wouldn't. So, okay. So
but you'd stick to the 5%.
I mean, that's just complying with the law, but I mean, it's not that hard to. I mean, I think this is great, and, you know, I don't want to be like a bummer, but, you know, I realize that there's no real, you know, she can't be made to make it a lower rent increase. So, I mean, it's helpful to hear the reasons. It's just, you know, it's not really going to help that much. I also would like to point out one other thing. you know, you look at like the year-over-year increase, and maybe it did. I mean, like I said, there's different numbers out there. Some saying a decrease, some saying an increase. But if you go back like 5 years, we're talking about like almost 100% increase in market rates. So I think, I mean, this has to be like an all-time great period to be a landlord. I mean, I guess maybe your property tax could go up. I don't know, but I mean, you must be making a lot more money now than you were like 3 years ago.
Well, in any business, regardless of what business it is, in any investment, regardless of what, I mean, my investment, I want to return on my investment, even though it doesn't happen, but I want it. You know, in any business, you hope that the return, you're going to get the return. That's what you're in business for. And I think it's opportunity for, you know, we live in this great democracy that allows us to make a decision. And, you know, you can decide if you want to or you, I just don't want to. And I know I'm crazy to say, you know, I don't want to, you know, and that's where, you know, rate rents have gone up. I mean, it's all over the Bay Area is the most expensive place to live in. I'm from Chicago. Trust me, it's high.
But what happened in 2008?
The crash?
Well, before we get into
that. I'm just trying to finish up on the rents are going up. And that, I guess the point was that if you're a housing provider, how much control do you have over your rate of return?
Right, you don't.
The market drives it.
Right, of course the market drives it, and you don't, you know. And unfortunately, I cringe at some of these rent rates. I really do. I cringe at what the market is calling for what you're getting. But the market is calling for what you're getting. I just, unfortunately, it's just the way it is. And
so I want to jump in because I think it's a good discussion. I want to make sure that we focus on what we can do and what we can offer. Like, Patrick, man, I hear you. Like, I think we're all very cognizant of the limitations of what we can do and what Alameda has in place. I'm a renter. Chris is a renter. I mean, we get it, you know. Yeah. So, but about, you know, if we can help you folks come to a resolution, you know, we're not going to find a resolution on maybe ideas about market rates and what value is there. And correct me if I'm wrong, but can I call you Vicky? Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay. Vicky, it sounds like you're pretty firm on the 5% and you don't see a reason, and it sounds like you think it's an issue of fairness to keep it at 5%. You're firm on that.
As the representative of the owner, yes.
Okay. And
if you understood what I just said.
Yeah, so you're firm on the 5%.
I'm firm on the 5%.
Okay, so then now I understand what you're trying to say. And Patrick, if you hear that and you've heard her explanation of it, I know you might not have to agree with it intellectually, but does that maybe satisfy you enough in a way to say, okay, I accept that? Or would you, if you don't, you don't have to, you know, we can take a vote and it might be different than the 5%, but it would be non-binding, and Jennifer can explain the process of what happens after that if you want. There is a process still to go if that's what you want. So if you're like, I don't agree with this, you know, and I want you folks to vote on it, that's what we're here for, and we can do that. I just want to make sure that we don't get into a discussion about, you know, stuff that we can't control.
Yeah.
We have a very limited scope about what we can do.
I mean, you know, I kind of, like I said, I feel like I don't really have much of a choice. I would just maybe, it sounds like you can't, you know, bargain at all, but I would put out maybe 2.5%.
Okay, what would the basis be for that?
Well, I guess one thing is I still haven't heard, you know, how much their costs have increased. It sounds like they just, you know, maybe have gone up a little bit, but they want to make more money. I just feel like it's just given that I moved in last year, I mean, I feel like I you know, haven't been here very long. And 5% just seems like a lot. I would also just point to some of these numbers that, you know, at least one group found that rents have gone down, and that given the square footage of my unit, I feel like I was probably at, you know, a reasonable price. So, I mean, you know, I think that's all I can really say. I question the market argument, and I realize you can't do much about that, but...
Well, we can vote.
You can vote.
And there is a... Jennifer, can you explain the process of what happens if we have a non-binding decision that we vote on, what the process is after that? And that might give some clarity. So I don't want to... I mean, there is a process. It's not like I come here and I'm not getting what I want, so, you know... Can we go through what
absolutely.
Happens?
Sure. Yeah. So, if there's not an agreement reached today, then the committee will vote on a recommendation, and then you both will have 7 days to decide if you accept the recommendation. And if the landlord chooses not to accept, as a tenant, you have the right to appeal the matter to the city council, who would review the recommendation and issue their own recommendation that ultimately would be non-binding, but I just want to know, it would be significant, it would go before the public at the city council, that discussion item.
Right, so it's not like, this isn't the end of the process.
Yeah.
I know it can feel sometimes a little futile, especially for, you know, ones that are under 5%, but it's not the end, you know, we're just part of a process.
Mm-hmm.
So don't ever agree to anything, either of you, that you really don't agree with, right? That's pretty good advice, because I think
that's what we're here for. It's called power balance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of other pieces of advice, I think. Maybe it's best for it. One is a point of information, and that is that I know you mentioned the idea of a raise next year, of an increase next year.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes above 5%, then it triggers a binding decision. And then you're coming to this committee, and us having a hearing here takes on a completely different complexion.
Okay.
So that's one thing I want you to
do. Yeah, that makes sense why they do 5% every year. But
it was a political decision, you know, to set it at 5%.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm anticipating that they might do the 5%. And then,
if they do. Let me go on to the next point that I wanted to let you know. But first of all, I think it's very important that you stepped up to want to begin this process of negotiating and having a voice. Because if you don't, then you're even more helpless.
Mm-hmm.
But what you'll find in this case, and I think you could tell is that where you have leverage in a negotiation like this is if you're willing to move.
Yeah.
Is if you're willing to say to the landlord, look, you know, I really like this place, I'd really be happy here, but it turns out I can actually do much better somewhere else. But mm-hmm. if you're willing to consider a lower raise, then I would be willing to stay. That's where you start to have leverage.
Yeah, well, I was maybe going to look around. I mean, you know.
But I think, you know, this is just to be helpful.
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, you got to value, feel like I'm a pretty good tenant. You know, I take care of my
Yeah,
clients.
Yeah. That becomes,
so,
that,
you know,
that becomes a part of PAC factor.
But, yeah.
Vicky seems reasonable. I would
she
say
does, yeah.
So talk to her.
Maybe you'll talk to her afterwards.
And the last thing I want to do is antagonize my landlord. I'm just, you know.
No. Don't feel like you're antagonizing. No. You're doing what you should be doing.
Yeah, so I think that's fine. A couple other things, just to kind of piggyback on what you had said. One of the things that should, a year down the road, rents go up again, one of the things that we are allowed to take into account is past rent increases. So we will all remember that last year at this time, you got a 5% rent increase. We understand what the rationale was for that rent increase. And so the following year, if it does come back up again, we don't know what the market is. As you said, some people are saying it's up, some people are saying it's down, so we're not going to know a year from now. We can take that into account. Two other points. One of the two is that I'm just going to use the $77 kind of stabilizes your expenses for the next year, because if utilities go up through the course of the year, they're the ones that are going to eat that.
All of it.
You know, for whatever it is. And so you don't have to. And again, at the end of next year, if you come back here again. The other thing has to do with the improvements. And down the road, you mentioned that there was going to be a roof, some common area improvements, things along those lines. So there's money that's going to be spent.
Right.
And I'm not a big one for granting any rent increases for past work, but I am more interested in making sure that there's money there for those types of improvements that go down the road. And then I just want to refer to an alternate scenario that we did not hear tonight, but it was a case that actually got settled. And it was a case where the rent had not been increased for a significant period of time. I won't go into the reasons why. The housing provider all of a sudden decided he needed the money, and the rent increase in 1 year was 25%, and the next one they were trying to get 18%. Now, that got settled, so we didn't have to hear it, but I would not have looked favorably upon giving any kind of a rent increase. So this idea of a small rent increase, but over time, kind of helps stabilize your living situation as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it could definitely be worse, so.
But at the end of the day, it's still your decision. If you just want to make sure that you have all the information to be able to make a good, intelligent decision.
Cool, sorry.
So, I guess, Patrick, you know, I don't want to delay this could you live with the 5%? Is that something that you think both intellectually, morally, financially, that you could live with, or would you want us to vote on it and see if we come to a different conclusion? Again, it's non-binding, and Jennifer's argument about what happens if either of you don't accept the vote that we have.
Are those mutually exclusive? Can I take both options? Or
you may not.
May not.
But else could try.
I guess I'm like partially misunderstanding this, you know, purpose of this, but I could live with it. Yeah, I mean, I can, like I said, I might look around. I mean, I'll be there for now. It's definitely like.
Whatever we do here does not impact what you can do outside.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if I live with, are you, I mean, I'd be interested to hear your recommendation, but I mean, if it's not like, you know, I'm not going to say that I can't live with it, so.
Just to reiterate, though, you do lay a foundation for a year down the road. That is the, one of the things, by coming to an agreement now, you have laid a foundation.
And I think to clarify, Patrick, the situation is right now we're in a discussion with both of you as the parties to this dispute to see if there's some way that you can reach an agreement with each other that obviates the need for us to make a formal decision. So if you can come to an agreement about a rent increase, then that would end the process here, and you two would have reached an agreement with the facilitation of this body. If you don't feel like you are at a place to come to an agreement, and my understanding of what that agreement would be based on Vicki's statement is that it would be agreeing to the 5% increase. So if you are choosing not to reach an agreement to accept that 5% increase, then we would go into a formal process of us as a group making a vote between the five of us to make a recommendation that would basically be the summation of our opinion about what would be the best course of action, but it's non-binding since the increase is at the statutory limit of 5%. So it would be our recommendation, but it would still be then up to the landlord to decide what to do with that.
Yes, and then you also get, that was very well put, and then you can always appeal, and it would go before the city council at a city council meeting in the public, and they would make a recommendation themselves.
Okay.
Does that clarify?
I mean, yeah, it does.
And I think the intention of this discussion here is that we all recognize that homes and rents are very, you know, emotionally complicated issues for everybody, and that there's a lot of emotion and feeling. And I think that the intention is to try to create a space of dialogue
where people can hear each other and come to an agreement that helps to maintain relationships, rather than always pushing things to a more formal process, which can sometimes leave people with a more complicated set of feelings about what's happened. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is even more challenging when you're in a living environment, close proximity. So we really do struggle, I realize, to try and keep the relationship together.
And they're different interests. They're different interests here, and so what we're trying to do is to create a space for those different interests to find some common ground.
Can I make a comment? I think the way that this is written, it gives an option to the renter to have an ultimate out if they decide to exercise it. You can either continue to do month-to-month, or you can do it on your lease. And that, those two, allows for that time to, prior to coming to a hearing or prior to the rent increase, to give that time to make a decision on, really, what do I want to do? Do I want to buy myself into this year, or do I want to continue to be a month-to-month tenant, and which allows me to give that prior 30 days to decide what it is that I want to do, or if I decide I want to move in 30 days. No one's forcing the move part, because you are a great tenant, but I think we've been equally as well, if I may say, based on what I've read and what I've seen, an equally great landlord, I hate to
use that.
Equally as great housing provider. Because I think that in your particular case, your lease was written as a 6-month lease with a month-to-month tenancy thereafter, which basically has us both on notice, which allows us to be graded as a housing provider, and you make the decision, do I still want to be in this relationship? And yet, if I don't want to be in this relationship, I can make a decision and not be bound to to be stuck. So that's just my other...
I have a question, actually. Are you allowed to raise the rent if you're not in a one-year lease? Is it only like an annual? Are you allowed to raise the rent for that? Okay.
Just once. So you can be month to month and still have a 1 year with no rent increase, even though it's month to month.
And second question: would the price be the same for a 1 year lease as the month to month? Like, is there any discount or anything? Hmm. So what's the advantage of doing a 1 year lease?
Some people decide they just want the 1 year lease as a platform of security.
Because, you lock in the rate, but it's the same rate that would be there regardless, right?
Right.
But
not all housing providers do that.
Right.
So I would think about a 1 year lease, if it was a reduced rate, possibly, but. If it's not, then I probably wouldn't want to do that. So I don't know. But
so just keep the flexibility then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some providers offer do that. They offer a lower rent with a lease.
I mean, because it'd be advantageous to you, to know that you've got someone in there for a year. So that would be something I would consider.
So Patrick, would you like us to do our process? Would we vote formally on what we think the recommendation or the rent increase should be? Would you like to continue with that, or would you want to accept the 5% and maybe decide what you want to do from there?
Yeah, I think I'll just accept it. It doesn't really feel like I'm reaching an agreement. It's more like I'm just accepting their terms, but that's fine. I mean, kind of expected that. And I don't really want to go to a formal thing. And I really do like where I live, and they have been really good, you know, housing providers. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'll just roll with it.
Okay.
So does it feel any better, at least knowing that there was a rationale that you were able to hear the explanations, though, as opposed to, hey, just here's, I'm throwing you 5% for no reason at all just because the market went up? I mean, there are benefits, I think, to mediation, is that the ability to sit and get educated. I mean, that's why I'm here, I know, and I hope many other people are here for that same reason.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I came, and I'm glad that I, you know, that I know that the electricity went up. And that it's, you know, 5% across the board. I didn't know that.
And you're going to get a new roof.
Actually, just got the pool today.
Yeah. So.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
Yeah.
In which case, Jennifer will, or you can meet with somebody in the back, right, afterwards?
Yeah, if I could just clarify. So the next step here is that we just, we formally have a verbal agreement right now. We would just like to confirm that with a written agreement. So if you could just meet with David in the back of the room, he's just going to print out a form. And then once you sign it, you just need to sign one copy. We'll send you a copy tomorrow in the mail and by email, so you both have the written acknowledgement of an agreement based on today. And then based on if you'd like to choose the one you lease or continue month to month, you can have that conversation after this. But this discussion is specifically just about the amount of the rent.
Okay.
Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, I really appreciate you both of you coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Don't move.
Oh, I got it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, don't move. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We need a drink of water. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for getting involved, Pat.
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming. Okay.
Last item. Take a break.
Is it a quite short break?
For the restroom purposes?
And last restaurant I cooked at in Berkeley, I was stayed very good friends with the owners of it, and they were best friends with a couple.
Oh, really? Good connection.
About 20 years. I've been a draw consultant for about 20 years. But yeah, I started cooking when I was young.
Oh, yeah. So you went to graduate school after cooking?
I helped put myself through graduate school with cooking. I cooked all the way through science school. I cooked before them too, but.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for the explanation.
Sure.
It's really interesting story.
Are you an attorney? Or are you?
I'm not an attorney. My background is in biochemistry.
Oh, okay. In academia or?
I'm just 5% in other cases are the hardest ones to deal with.
I did go to work for some companies. And then I became one.
Thank you, guys.
They really are.
You were, again, very good. It's like, nice to tell you. You just took over as the property manager?
Well, I'm the interim property manager. And so they figure out what they're going to do.
Semi-retired.
Which we didn't know. So I took over because I had the personal.
And I had a...
But what I am, I school teacher. My hands are tied on how much I can say.
It's
going to all work out for him. It's going to be fine. That's what someone's like, don't worry about it. You put a whole cart in front of the horse. Just hold on a minute.
Well, because there's many motivations, for being here. But that's the idea.
Yeah, and I think it was great. I really do. And I think once I put it in perspective, I'm like, all your utilities are included.
Also, what I did was to write research guides.
Yeah, well, actually, those were some of the questions that I was going to be asking. Like,
they're all
because you're the buffer, kind of, with the utilities going up.
Yeah.
But I assume the place is not separately metered. Right, it can't be if you're...
No.
That makes it really challenging to try and figure out.
So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to go ahead and go back to the owners. He pays for parking. See if they'll come. You know.
La, 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 la.
No. But it, no, this is
but, awesome. But it's
but, you know,
like tense relations.
Yeah, of course. To make them, make them feel better. So thank you guys very much. I really appreciate your time.
Yes, okay. I think you're coming in, too.
Thank you. Oh, you're saying, I see what you're saying. You're saying
it's a rare time.
But I like the timing. 2-3 months, I'm out of it.
Yeah, I understand.
Talk to you, folks.
Like, I'm going to request that. I was like so sad. I'm sure she's a little happy. Yeah.
I suppose I should get some tips or something. I'm not sure they'd be relevant.
So we lost all of our audience, too. None of the fun, all the fun, all the action's over with, right?
Did we lose the officers, too?
Oh, no.
Are you taking over for Claudia?
When? What's the time for?
ASAP. We're not on the record, so we can talk about the staff changes if you'd like. But I would just want to do that.
Not on record, yeah.
We're not on the record yet. We haven't been. We're not recalled.
We're recording.
Oh, are you recording?
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So,
are we back on the record?
We're back on now.
Okay, we're back on the record.
Okay, recess is over. 7C, we have a new committee member and a reappointed committee member. So we have to vote on a chair and a vice chair. I was going to make a motion, but I usually defer to you guys first if you'd like. Does anyone have thoughts?
Well, if I could just speak to the chair, I just wanted to clarify the term and how many terms you can serve as a chair, you can have some context.
Thank you.
That'd be great. So, a chair serves 1-year term and cannot serve more than 2 consecutive terms as chair.
Okay.
So, 2-year limit. And that would begin at the next meeting if what happens today.
And how long does the president serve as chair?
1 year come August. Mm-hmm. Tempus fecit.
Yes, but you were an acting chair for a couple of months before that.
I guess I was.
Yes.
It was.
You drew the short straw.
I drew the short straw. The chair was... No, I don't even know
her name. Yeah, so it was the...
Susan.
That's right. We hardly knew you. So does anyone, would anyone like to make a motion?
So are you eligible for chair?
I am eligible for chair.
Yeah. So we don't need to do it by motion, per se, because you don't need a second when you're doing nominations.
You don't?
No. That was what I read in the most recent iteration that I had of the policies and procedures.
For the committee?
Yeah.
That if you all vote for the nomination, then you don't need to second it. Is that what you're saying?
It just said you don't need a second. A nomination does not need a second of the motion, if I understand it right.
But you do need a motion.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a motionable action.
I don't think so.
It's just an election. You do nominations.
You
votes.
You can self-nominate.
It's up to the, and I don't think it's defined whether it's a secret ballot or a public ballot. I think it's just sort of up to the chair.
I think it's probably not secret because we're a public agency and it's agendized item. Yes. So, yeah, because I did try to read up on this. So I'm not going to be bashful.
We make a motion to accept the results. Mm.
That might be good. So anyway, I wasn't going to be shy, and I was going to self-nominate for the chair.
Anyone else like to self-nominate for the chair?
Yeah, I'd like to be the chair also.
I don't think it's appropriate for me to do that at this point. I'm content to be a member and to process.
Okay.
So I appreciate the opportunity, but I think I shall let others with more experience step into that role this time.
Who are you going to nominate?
I was going to nominate Milt.
Did I see this?
I was just thinking.
Oh, okay.
And if I could add just through the chair, I think in this process, the idea is that it's public, the recording will be available, no one's in the audience, but it can be helpful if you add some thought process behind your nomination.
Oh, you want reason.
If you're comfortable doing that.
Okay. Well, my thought process is that traditionally, the housing provider has been the chair.
I'm sorry, if I could just clarify. There's housing provider and there's homeowner.
I beg your pardon. The homeowner has been the chair. That position was absent for quite some time, or at least several months, which is why I interned as chair. And then Milt was new. And also I thought I can't be chair more than 2 consecutive years, and I'm in the first year and a half, maybe, or 2 years of a 4-year term, and maybe I would like to do it again, but I see the value in having a different perspective, but I also thought maybe I'd like to come back and do it again, and not just kind of burn out in the first 2 or 3 years. And I also thought that maybe I could be vice chair if you folks thought that was okay to try to help the process.
I could definitely support vice chair. Although, correction on the past chairs. So there hasn't been a housing provider as the chair since 2014 when Karen Miller was the last chair. And then after that, David Perry took over, and David was a tenant representative. And I can't remember, there was a short term where there was...
It was the homeowner, it was Susan. Yeah. So I think when she came on board, you saw that. The homeowner was the chair.
My television, when I say history, means 2 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
When I came out, actually, someone told me that was the tradition, so that's kind of what I'm talking about.
I go back to the beginning of 2014 when Karen was still around. Yeah, so there hasn't been a housing provider chair for 3 years. But I don't think that's necessarily a reason to be the chair, because that's a position and you're not an advocate no matter what.
Right, none of us are.
No. I think what should be based more is on training and experience, so that when we get into certain situations, we've got people that know how to handle them.
So may I ask Milt and Jeff to each state a basis on which you believe that you would be a good chair? Why you want to have the position?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. I've been on the committee for a year or so, and during that time, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about what the possibilities are here, what could be accomplished, and what I have discovered in all of this is that, although I came with experience in Robert's Rules and how to run meetings and things like that, how to stay focused and how to accomplish something by the end of the day or before everybody got too tired. What I have learned is that the role of the chair involves both a soft and a hard touch, and that these touches come up at different times. And I've been very interested, and I am interested in ensuring that remains. And so, I think that we as a committee have a very important role to play. It's important for us to educate people about that role and to define it to the people who are involved in these disputes, because I think sometimes they just don't really know what's going on here or what's possible for them. So I think one important thing that we do is to, and that I could do as a chair, is to help people understand exactly what's going on here. And the other is that I think that on the other hand, so that's the sort of harder edge to it. I think on the other hand, people want to be heard. And I think that we have all at times responded to that and contribute to it. And I think it's very important that we all contribute to that. And I think it's important that the chair make sure that that happens. So those are my two focuses, is to stay on point in a way so that we actually accomplish something, and the other is to make sure that the process remains human.
Okay, so I probably come with the most experience in training, I think, for mediation, and mediation is one of those things that I think you'd need to have the training as the foundation to work with the tools, but it definitely is a hands-on, that you don't learn mediation through a book and through processing. So because of I have probably 100 and some odd hours of training in various aspects of mediation, and it isn't just mediation. Some of the things that we have to deal with here, for instance, is power balance. And I think Patrick was a great example tonight of coming in and saying, why am I even here? And the idea is trying to make sure that he is heard and give him reasons, or give any person that's in that different situation to feel like they do have some power. And I think that was what we tried to do tonight in the laying the foundation for next year, that maybe right now it didn't look that way, but next year you'd have that. But the other part, and not the mediation part, because I think all of us have some of that mediation training, is the other piece of training that I have is facilitation. And the facilitation is an entirely separate skill in being able to manage four other people, in the sense of making sure everybody has their voice heard, and that when we come to a decision, for instance, the last decision we made, we had four that approved the rent increase and one that abstained. And there really wasn't a good structure for understanding what that abstention was. And I would have liked to have tried to understand why there was an abstention. There was another time, Brendan, when I was sitting out there, and you specifically were uncomfortable with the rent increase, and yet never had the opportunity, not that I don't think anybody bullied you, but never actually had the opportunity to say, I think that's too high, and be able to have the opportunity to say why. Now, I saw it out there and wanted to say, could you let Brendan talk, please? I would have liked to have heard that reason, because it would have been another perspective that maybe the four didn't have. And doesn't mean that you're going to sway for other people, but we talk about dollar amounts, and maybe that $110 amount would have been an $80 amount based on that information that you'd put in. Experience, I mentioned that experience is probably the best teacher, and I have many, many scars to show for that teaching experience. Been mediating since 2001, but more importantly, back to the facilitation part of it, I have facilitated high conflict, multi-stakeholder situations. And this is the, I think, the part where we don't always have much control over what's happening. And Brendan, I don't think you were, no, you were not here the night we had the landlord.
No, I wasn't.
No, you were very lucky. And I was in the audience, though, and it wasn't a pretty situation for anybody to deal with. All I can say is that I have been in those types of situations before, and at least potentially because of the experience, might have been able to diffuse that a bit.
What happened in that situation?
Just a landlord that basically, a white male landlord and African-American tenant about a heater issue. There were two landlords, and the structure for the discussion went south pretty quickly. Wouldn't you say, Milt? It went south very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it was becoming clear that we needed to maybe somehow try and grab some better control over that, and it didn't quite happen. And of course, there was an audience there, and then you had a tenant sitting in the chair as well. So just one of those, a very, very difficult situation. You don't learn that out of a book. So I actually was one of the few times I would have liked to have said, I would rather be in this seat to at least try and deflect some of what was going on. So that's the experience level. And I think I want to echo kind of what Milt said about having more committee participation when we're talking to our individual disputants, and recognizing the power balance that we have to deal with. And that's a much more affirmative action that we all could probably use some training in, so that somebody comes here and feels like they are actually heard. Then the final part is when we do our recommendations, there's still a perception out in the community that those are arbitrary decisions. And I sat there and I don't think any of our decisions have ever been arbitrary, even when you were, the four of you were making them. But I think articulating the basis for them would be helpful for the community. So the one that comes to mind is that we had back-to-back hearings where one time the landlord wanted 25% and wouldn't allow any roommates, and we gave the person a 5% rate increase. Then the very next month, we had another one where the landlord wanted a 100% rate increase. It was the tenant that hadn't gotten a rate increase since like 1997 or some weird amount. And then we gave them a 30% and then a 20% rate increase. And the following night, it was in front of the city council at public comment about how unfair and how arbitrary that decision had been. But on social media, it got spun as one time you do this and one time you do this. Now, in both cases, they were the right decision to make. And if I were sitting here, I would have done the exact same thing. But I think it's important that we are able to articulate those decisions a little bit better. And finally, just making sure that we recognize our roles is that we are not neutral, we are impartial. And that's a huge distinction and sometimes hard for people to get their head around. So those are the things that I think are on my mind as that I would like to see as a chair get advanced.
Could I ask some follow-up questions as well?
Yes.
I think it's really healthy that I have never had any social media presence. I'm just not interested in any of that. I'd rather just
have a coffee with my friends. But I know that we're unique, I think, among boards, except for maybe the planning board and maybe a few others, that we get a lot of attention. Probably a lot that's not even really deserved. And I wonder...
Not for our great beauty.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer. I wonder if you could both speak to how you maybe handle that and mitigate that, you know? Because I've done a lot of meetings with Jennifer and other staff members and the city attorney, maybe a little bit more than you guys know. And they seem, the pressure they're under is a lot more than our pressure. And I can only speak to my experience. I try to reassure them that is not an issue in anything that I do. You know, this is what we're supposed to do, and we're focused on that, and I don't read blogs, and people can write whatever they want, and because I have faith in the people that are here. So I wonder if you guys could speak to how you handle that pressure.
Can I clarify your question so that I understand their answer?
Sure.
Are you asking about how they handle it personally in terms of their own personal social media presence, or are they asking
No.
about how they would handle it for the committee as a whole?
For the committee as a whole.
Okay, thank you.
And also,
for the committee.
For the committee, and also, you know, I guess just for me, it's really important that people come here and have confidence in the process. I don't want anyone to come here and think, oh, darn, I'm a landlord, and this is going to be totally against me. Or, oh, darn, I'm a tenant, and this is going to be totally against me. Or, I think I know this person on the committee, and I'm going to tailor my response to them. And I wonder if you guys could speak to
I think it's very important how we appear to the public. And I think that in general, I think that the way I would like us to appear is that we are focused on doing a good job. You know, that we are doing our best at doing a good job and doing the job that the community has asked us to do, so that we know what our job is and we make every effort to do it, including the impartiality that Jeff was referring to, and also the focus on achieving the mission that we're assigned to do. I think personally that a lot of public confusion comes from the fact that they don't really know what we're here for, whether we're here to represent landlords, whether we're here to represent tenants, whether we're here to represent the city council, or whether we're here to... I think it's important just to clarify what we're here to do, to make it simple and easy to understand, and then to go about doing it with an appropriate amount of gravitas, just seriousness. And I would let, to the extent that there are fires that start or concerns that are raised, I think we need to respond to those. But I think that we should be led by our purpose rather than led by what the public thinks or how the public is responding, or what somebody's blog writes.
So I think that was the point I was trying to make earlier, is that making sure that when we do our decision, that there is a basis for it. That we don't just say 7% without saying, I've looked at these factors, or these are the things that I weigh. And that's each one of us individually, because we don't all come up with 7%. So Chris may come up with a number. I'd like to know, how did he arrive at that number? You would come up, Milt, and then I would come up with mine. But I would be evaluating all those others. Well, yeah, I didn't think about that part of it. So that when we are arriving, I would love to see unanimous decisions for every case we have. And I think that of the newer configuration, not the older when we were at City, when they were at City Hall. City Hall meetings were not exactly mediations. There were many things that were not conducive to a good relationship. So this group has done an excellent job, prior to me being on here, has done an excellent job. And I think the only thing that needs to be added to that is we got this unanimous decision, and these were the reasons we gave this decision. As far as what happens on social media, I couldn't care less. I definitely would not respond in any way, and I don't think as a chair it would be appropriate to respond. But if there's a perception out in the community about how we are as a board, then I think it's something we at least need to be aware of. So there are still people that think we can't issue a binding decision. Happened just last week, and I happened to get it from a friend who got it from a friend, and I said, you need to go back onto that block and tell them we absolutely can do enforceable decisions. So I assume that that got done. So I don't think we bow to social pressure at all, but if there's a misperception about our authority, then somehow that needs to be resolved, and it may not be us, that may be a staff job to resolve that. Because anything we say potentially is going to get skewed no matter what. And keeping in mind that the person that is the chair does not have the right or authority to speak for the committee at all. So anything I think would, any along those lines, would be inappropriate to do.
So just a couple of points. The first one being, I really respect wanting to get a unanimous decision on everything, and I feel like we generally do. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I would say we're over 95%. But I really feel that in those 5% of those cases, that you know, pursuing that unanimous decision is probably detrimental to the case as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, having four of the five members agree, then one, you know, dissent. I think that's perfectly fine, and you know, I think if we tried to pursue unanimous decisions in those 5% of the cases, that you know, it could be harmful to our overall mission. So, you know, if I do vote for you for chair, I'd want you to be, you know, cognizant of that and not try to push it all the time. I mean, obviously, you would want to hear why they dissent, but, you know.
So I think that's the distinction. It's just making sure the voice is heard. Not to beat somebody up to say, no, I think you should be thinking the way the other four. It actually goes the other way. Do the other four need to hear what the one, maybe minority view is? Because I would like to at least hear it. You know, evaluate and say, yes, I'm going to take that into account, or no, I'm not.
And then for both of you, I feel as a committee that we have a tendency to repeat ourselves from, you know, one person will say something, then another person will say basically the same thing, and then a third or a fourth. And it's why I usually don't say much, because someone else is saying the point I've already wanted to say. And I feel when we badger them with the same point over and over, it kind of hurts after a while. So from either of you, I would like to see that, and it's nothing that you've done wrong, it's just something that we all do naturally, but...
No, too late.
Right. It's part of the struggle. Yeah, because I team mediate as well. With two, it's a little bit easier. With five, and it's really uncomfortable when you've got two people there that have not come to resolution, and we're all... maybe we should try and reiterate the point that was said earlier, and...
Maybe you don't understand.
Yes, because it's uncomfortable. Silence is uncomfortable.
So it's effective negotiating terms.
Yes, it can be.
So.
Yeah, but I guess to just draw the distinction, it isn't we're looking for unanimous decisions, but I think a unanimous decision, what reflects is the view of all of our perspectives together is seems like an ideal. In fact, earlier, a year and a half, 2 years ago, this body was actually criticized for having unanimous decisions. Made the front page of the paper. So, but I think when you look at everybody's view and trying to take into account so that we do get the best result, but no, you're not going to get unanimous, and I would not push a unanimous decision.
I think Chris moved on to a second point, which is he was talking about the way we repeat ourselves.
Yes.
Suggesting that perhaps the chair could
be
take
a little
more mindful.
Had you finished what you said?
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty much my entire point. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You should try to be the chair, because what happens is that you can't direct it too much.
you know, you can't say, well, you know, even in a subtle way, that something has already been said. Because our success depends on each of us being engaged and lending our kind of consciousness, you know, to our higher purpose, to what we're really trying to accomplish. And it's especially the case for the landlord and the tenant. So their ability, you know, to be engaged and to feel like they have a voice and to be able to speak that voice, you know, to speak what they want to say at the right time when they need to say it, is really an art and is important. So it's sometimes, you know, to some extent a chairman can help move things along or can revise things, but I think you can't always be perfect. You can't be 100% efficient.
No, and I would never expect anybody to be 100% efficient. That's just unrealistic. But
I think one of the important things you're saying, Chris, is that you often have things to say and that you don't because you think it's already been said, but my guess is that you would say it in a different way.
My concern with that is I feel often that you know, something's been resolved or near resolution, and then we go back and readdress it in another way.
Let's pick that scab, Robert.
Yeah, where something's basically been settled. You know, neither party were necessarily happy with it, but they both, you know, agreed that this is what has to go on to proceed, and then we've gone back and readdressed it, and it's just opened the wound again, and, you know, it becomes a fight one more time just to get back to the point we were previously at. Mm-hmm. So
I submit the new composition of the committee will have an improvement on that.
Yeah.
I think that raises a question, and I'm a new member, so I have a lot of questions about, you know, how the committee operates and how it should operate. It raises the question of what's the purpose of the mediation stage. Is the purpose of the mediation stage to reach an agreement, or is the purpose of the mediation stage to allow each of the parties to be heard in a way that allows them to feel resolved? Those are two slightly different purposes, and they can certainly overlap, but reaching an agreement does not necessarily always mean that the parties feel they have resolved whatever it is that brought them to the table. And you can see that tonight with the situation here, because it was clear that Vicki was going to stick with the 5% for a variety of reasons, and that Patrick was not entirely happy with that, and that there was a point where there appeared to be an agreement, and yet it certainly seemed to me that Patrick was still uncomfortable in a way that required us to acknowledge and to create an opportunity for him to say something. So I'm just raising that as an issue, that it's something that we should come to some agreement and understanding about among ourselves, about in the mediation phase, you know, what are we looking for, and what are the kind of markers that we think should be in place for us to feel like, yeah, okay, you know, we have an agreement and we're going to go forward with that.
And can I just speak to the chair for 1 minute on this issue?
Yeah, I have something in my head, so I'm going to respond to that real quick. And is that okay?
Well, I'm just concerned that we need to stay on the topic of what's agendized.
Okay.
And that there will be a training where this discussion, that's exactly what that we will agendize an opportunity for these points to be discussed. If you feel that you can't make the chair vote without this discussion, I just want to be highlighting the importance to discuss what's on the agenda tonight.
Okay. In which case, I have a very unsexy question. Is that so? The chairmanship is for a year. I would imagine that both you are fine and would commit to being as as able to being in all of the meetings for the year. I ask because we've been here the longest, and there's been a lot of turnover.
Yeah.
So
we've been here, what, 2 years now? We started at the same time, I think.
We started just about the same time, and there's been a lot of turnover, and consistency is, I think, gotta be key. And if either of you feel that, you know, oh gosh, maybe in a couple months I might not, I'd really like to hear it. Yeah.
Well, you've seen me here, and before you were here, I was still here.
I still saw you here.
Yes, you still saw me here. So it was late 2014. I think I've missed 3 meetings total. One of them was a serious medical condition.
Got it.
I think meeting attendance is very important. It happens that I probably will miss the August meeting, but I don't have any other conflicts. I wanted to just return briefly to what Chris was saying, because I think that it's, I think maybe what we're talking, one of the underlying issues is how do we improve what we're doing? Is how do we improve our making these discussions, these decisions together? We don't really have an opportunity, you know, to kind of, what's the word? Revisit our discussion and talk about what we did well or what we could have done better.
Debrief.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to do a training. Maybe we'll do it once a year, and that'll be a good opportunity. But I don't know if we could benefit from
more
something.
Trainings.
Maybe so.
Or the debrief could be the first part of the next meeting. I don't know how often you guys, but at the end of the evening when I'm leaving, I go take my dog for 2.5 or 3 miles, and I rethink every minute of it.
I just want to reemphasize that we need to stay on the agenda item.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So,
and I just want to acknowledge that I do hear a need to agendize further discussion of procedures and ideas to improve. So,
okay.
Not to dismiss that, but just to do it on the day that we've had that agenda.
Sure, got it. Okay, understood. Chris, you sure you don't want to be chair?
Yeah, I'm positive.
Okay, in which case, I'd love to vote.
And if I could speak to the chair again.
Yeah.
I would just like, Claudia was in touch with the city attorney's office, so mm-hmm. we can just clarify the voting procedures for nominations specifically.
Okay, that'd be very helpful.
Okay.
So what John explained to me is, for example, if we have two people being nominated, we nominate the two people, and then we take a vote. And the two people being nominated would not take a vote, because obviously they would probably vote for themselves, I imagine. But for example, we would have three. If it's two people, we would have three. So then we need to get a vote from the three.
And I can just add that we would vote for the chair and the vice chair as two separate votes.
Yep.
I nominate Milt for chair and myself as vice chair.
So I think we've had nominations, so I think the issue now is to vote.
Yes.
And I think the people who are going to vote are Christopher, you, and me, since Jeff and Milt have been nominated.
But don't we have to do them separately?
Yeah.
Right.
We'll do the chair first.
And then the vice chair.
The vice
who are we nominating for chair?
So both Milt and Jeff have been nominated
Jeff.
For chair.
Okay, and now we vote.
And now we vote, so it's Chris and you and I vote.
Okay.
So I think I know what your vote is.
Yeah, I vote for Milt.
I didn't see that coming. It was a shock. I'm going to vote for Jeff.
Okay.
And
vote
then
for Jeff.
Okay, that was quick.
Okay.
So two for Jeff.
Thank
Susan
you.
Susan and Christopher.
Sarah.
Say yes.
Don't give me the name of somebody who's already resigned because
you're
setting up
a precedent.
Sarah and Christopher and Jeff.
Yes.
We have one vote for Mel.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for chair.
Yeah. And just as a point, I thought you would have made a great chair. But
oh, thanks.
I like the dynamic of tenant landlord. And you as kind of a neutral third party. But I also appreciate that Jeff's been here for quite some time in an mm-hmm. unofficial capacity, and he's seen a lot more than pretty much any of us have seen on this committee. So.
Well, in the realm of commenting on the vote, I'm absolutely fine with it. So for me, it was just an adventure. as is every meeting, I must say.
Okay, so Vice Chair, nominations?
I'd like to nominate Brendan.
Okay.
One nomination and a vote.
I vote for Brendan.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that concludes the item 7C.
Okay.
There's no public.
Oh, yeah. Any public comment on non-agenda items? Yes, chance.
No public comment. No public
comment. No public comment. Okay. I was initiated.
I just have a fear. I just want to touch on briefly, so we keep picking up, but the training will happen on July 17th, which is the next scheduled meeting. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the items we are going to be agendizing. If you want to add or critique, please let me know before 17th so we can prepare and make sure that it's thorough to allow for discussion on all the items that you'd like to see. So in brief, we're going to be discussing in more detail with the city attorney's office conflict of interest, perceived bias, and due process. We'll get into a little bit more of the Sunshine Ordinance, which is going to be about third-party communication and just more clarity on making motions and conducting a meeting in general. You had asked for a brief overview of best practices relating to maintenance, notification between tenants and landlords, and then sort of like a skeleton version of staff case development, what staff does with parties prior to reaching this table, and then more for discussion between the committee members will be committee procedures, such as what you've been discussing about is there ways to improve and structure, that sort of thing, and then discussion of the factors under consideration. We've heard requests for the city attorney to provide more clarity on items such as fair rate of return. So we will be providing that opportunity for discussion, and John will be here to answer questions. And then we can add, you know, we can use cases to debrief and talk about. I think that would fit into a lot of the other items that I've listed here. And then separate to that, I just wanted to address the news because it doesn't relate specifically to the committee, but and this is not a place to have a policy discussion, but I do want to just keep you informed that there's currently no changes to the ordinance that affect the way that you operate your committee, and that staff will update you if there are amendments that come into play that would change your role at all. But I just wanted to clarify that things are consistent in the way that they have been since March 31st, 2016. So the ordinance that's in place and is continuing until further notice, and we'll let you know. Those are the two guys.
Does anyone?
I have a slight response to that. I was wondering if we could also discuss the question of financial need.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have all the factors under consideration.
Oh, okay.
That was an example, but I can highlight the financial need.
And if you can find somebody who might have some definition for what it means, somebody who works in the community, just find out what that might mean to people.
Okay.
And we are going to be discussing procedure with... like when we should alert staff to, or the attorney to, when we, like public comment, and when folks get a hold of us, and how we should respond if we should respond. Right, that's in the
right.
training.
So I think you're talking about third party communication.
Correct.
As well as
yes, thank you.
I think while you're here, public comment, and then outside of the room, public comment, that kind of thing. So that's going to be folded into Sunshine Ordinance, conflict of interest, due process, that discussion.
Okay.
But thanks for highlighting.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, is John going to also cover the basic Brown Act stuff? Because the Sunshine Ordinance is in addition to the basic Brown Act stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this came up last meeting when I made it. I always think of them together, but right.
Okay.
I can articulate that. Sunshine Ordinance and Brown Act training are
folded into one. When we hear Sunshine Ordinance, it means Brown Act too.
Well, I can argue to that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with it.
Okay.
Anything else? No? In which case, we're adjourning the meeting at 8:24.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.